This is an iHeart podcast. Guaranteed human.
Crime Stories with Nancy Grace.
Her body was never found. Her little girl is being raised without her mother or a father. Why? Because Kelsey Barrett was murdered, her body burned. By who? Patrick Frazee, with the help of his then mistress, the rodeo queen, literally. In the last days, Frazee back in court. Why won't he go away? I'm Nancy Grace. This is Crime Stories. I want to thank you for being with us. In the last days, the Colorado Supreme Court upholds the conviction of a Teller County man guilty in murdering his fiance. The mother of his child, his fiance, Kelsey Barrett, last seen at a Woodland Park Safeway Thanksgiving Day. She was speaking to her mom on the phone about recipes. Her phone then pinged in Gooding, Idaho, days later. Now, years later, her body still has not been found. Why? I think because Patrick Frazee burned it. And of course, Frazee appeals his conviction. What do we know about the facts and the evidence that landed him behind bars?
Thanksgiving is the last known time Kelsey Barrett was seen in public. It was at this Safeway store where she was captured by the store's security cameras. Cheryl Barrett says she spoke with Kelsey by phone that day twice.
What did you talk about that day?
It was just small things. And initially, she needed a recipe.
Based on that conversation, there was nothing to make you believe there was anything wrong.
Exactly. Yeah, her voice was fine. It was a normal day for her.
Where is a missing mom, Kelsey Barrett? The search intensifies as the mystery deepens. Right now, tick tock, tick tock. Every hour counts. There is a chance she can still be brought back alive. I'm Nancy Grace. This is Crime Stories. Thank you for being with us. Joining me, Ashley Wilcott, judge, lawyer. You can find her at ashleywilcott.com. Karen Smith, forensics expert, joining us out of the Florida jurisdiction. Forensic psychiatrist, Dr. Daniel Bober, and joining me right now, crimeonline.com investigative reporter, Ellen Killoran. Let's start at the beginning. What happened to Chelsea? Tell me everything. Give me the beginning of the crime line, the timeline, Ellen, because that's what's so important.
Kelsey disappeared on November 22nd, which is Thanksgiving Day. We know that on that day, she went to a Safeway supermarket near her home in Woodland Park, Colorado. She had her one-year-old daughter with her there. After that, she met with her fiancé, Patrick Frazee, who she doesn't live with, and handed off her daughter. She has not been seen since. The only time that she's been heard from, two messages were sent from her cell phone on Monday, November 25th. One was to her fiancé, and we don't know what that message said. And another was to her employer, DOS Aviation, where she works as a pilot.
Whoa, wait. Ellen Killoran, crimeonline.com. Are you telling me she actually spoke verbally to her employer or texted or emailed?
No, it was a text. It was a text message sent from her phone.
Okay, now wait. I thought you said the last person she spoke to was the fiancé and the employer.
They were both text messages.
So she spoke to nobody then.
Say that?
She spoke to nobody other than her mother that previously?
The last voice conversation that her mother had with her was on Thanksgiving Day, and she saw her fiancé in person later that day.
So the last person she actually spoke with was her mother several days before she goes missing, Ellen Killoran, my dear, sweet, precious snowflake. Ellen, you know what? Let me, Karen Smith, why do I always have to be the bad guy? Can you explain to Ellen why every word counts? It's very important. Did she speak to somebody the day she goes missing? Or was it a text from her phone, which guess what? Nobody can find. Karen, school, my dear Ellen Killoran.
I don't think I need to school Ellen, but I'll tell you what.
Or you may need to take her to the woodshed.
Having text messages rather than a vocal call. I mean, come on. This is law enforcement and forensics 101. A text message can be sent by anybody who has access to that phone. If it's not passcode enforced, if you have a thumbprint that actually you have access to because you put your thumbprint on that phone when it was unlocked at some point, it's not that difficult anymore. So if it's only text messages, we don't know who sent them. They're going to have to go into that phone once they find it and figure out where those text messages were actually sent from.
And that leads me to another forensic point. Hold on, Ashley Wilcott. I know you're chomping at the bit. Dr. Daniel Bober, forensic psychiatrist. Let's go into the mind of someone that would get rid of Chelsea, a mother of a little baby girl, okay? Get rid of her. And then, this is my question, think to use her phone to cover their tracks and text the boyfriend, the fiance, text the employer and go, oh, I'm taking a week off. That's a whole nother animal from somebody flying off the handle and getting mad at a bar and go, you took my money, bam, you're dead, versus killing somebody, disposing of the body, and then making all these surreptitious texts and, you know, emails to cover your tracks. That's a whole different way of thinking, Dr. Bober.
I agree, Nancy. It's on a whole different level. But your previous guest said, those text messages, you know, are going to be valuable because with text messages, unlike with vocal communication, you know, there is going to be the amount of texting, the words that were actually used, and, you know, people that are familiar with her are going to know the way that she communicates. And so there's, I think, a treasure trove of information potentially there in those text messages.
Okay, Ellen Killoran, are you embarrassed? Because I'm embarrassed for you.
I am.
Okay, good. Now that you've been totally publicly shamed, now I need some facts from you. It's really important, and I'm kidding around a tiny bit, but it really is crucial. It's crucial when you're trying to establish a timeline, which is where everything starts. Every investigation starts with a timeline and the forensics around that timeline. So let's talk about these. The last time she was seen was how many days before she was reported missing?
10 days.
10 days. Okay, just give me short, brief answers. So we got 10 days. Darn, that's a long time. Now, into that 10 days, when did the texts come in, number one, and were they pinged, and if so, from where?
The text came in on November 25th, which is 3 days after she was last seen.
Okay, so hold on. Jackie's editing this. The text came in 3 days after she went missing. Okay, got it. 3 days after she went missing, she texts fiance and employer. Is that correct, Ellen?
That's right.
So both of them were texted in 1 day.
That's right.
And interesting.
On the same day, her phone was pinged in Idaho, about 600 miles away from where she lived. But authorities have said they can't confirm that she was actually with her phone at the time.
But they can confirm that ping. We know that the ping is correct.
Yes.
Okay, joining me right now, judge, lawyer, Ashley Wilcott. Ashley, weigh in on what we have ferreted out so far.
Well, you know, I do have a lot to say about this, Nancy. So here's the thing. We don't know what happened to her. Best case, she decided to take off, God willing, God hoping, because that would mean she's safe.
Ashley, you know how I feel about you and your family and your great, 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 great grandparents that came over on the Mayflower. But Ashley, how can you even fix your mouth to say that? Maybe she went away. This girl is no idiot. She's a flight instructor. Isn't that right, Ellen Killoran? She's a flight instructor?
That's right.
I mean, this woman can get up in a plane and fly around and teach other people. She's no idiot, but she loses her phone.
Well, maybe she had some freak out of, I need to take a little break. That's my prayer. Okay, so go back to the reality.
Wait, Ashley, I'm back on you. I'm on you like a cheap suit. A girl that wants a break. Okay, let's look at what we know. And I may have to go back to the shrink on this one. Ashley Wilcott, a woman that's calling her mom for a recipe is not a woman who's going to leave her mom hanging out in the wind.
doesn't know where you are, worried, sick about you, not taking care of your baby girl. No, I mean, you see the dichotomy there, right? Like, I call my mother, I call Miss Talbert from my little Methodist church in Macon, various people for recipes, okay, because I love them and their knowledge means something to me. Those are the people you love that you call for recipes, Ashley.
Okay, so now Nancy's embarrassed me because you're right.
Oh, I'm so happy. I've caused so much misery today. Go ahead.
So here's the thing about the texts on the phone and not knowing if the phone's with her. We see it all. So regrettably, someone could easily think, ooh, I'm just going to text this person and this person or text the boyfriend so they think she's fine. And that gives me more time with her because we don't know if she's dead, if she's been abducted and she's being held somewhere. So it is not outside the realm of possibilities.
Well, let me give you all something to think about. And Maul, why did the fiance put up a stink about giving DNA?
Kelsey's fiance, Patrick Frazee, told police he last saw her Thanksgiving afternoon when he picked up their daughter. Kelsey was not reported missing until 10 days later by her mother.
Patrick has done everything that he has been asked for by law enforcement.
Jeremy Lowe, Patrick Frazee's attorney, says his client has been interviewed by law enforcement, voluntarily released his phone to be searched by investigators, and provided photographs along with cheek swabs for DNA. Police have said Frazee is cooperating.
I have no reason to believe that he is a suspect, and the police have not isolated him as a suspect in this case.
Frazee and Barrett do not live together, but Barrett's mother says their bond is strong.
The relationship has been good. They're loving.
She remains hopeful her daughter will be found.
The speculation hasn't been helpful. Don't try to figure this out. We've got people trying to do that. Just share the photo. There's more important things to be done.
At this point, police say the case remains a missing persons investigation.
In the back of my mind, sure, there's a possibility something else could have happened, but it does me no good to go down that road, and I don't think it does Kelsey any good either.
29-year-old Kelsey Barrett has not been seen since she was recorded on surveillance cameras in a grocery store in Woodland Park, Colorado, with her baby daughter. Her fiancé, Patrick Frazee, tells that she dropped the baby off after that grocery store trip, and he has not seen or heard from her since. Now, the two have never lived together, despite being engaged and sharing a daughter. Interesting, the fiancé was not present at a press conference and has been scrutinized on social media for refusing to speak openly about missing Chelsea. But despite that scrutiny, her mother says they had a very good relationship. Straight out to Ellen Kaloran, CrimeOnline.com investigative reporter. Ellen, what can you tell me about the fiance? Because that is where every timeline starts. The last time someone was seen or spoken to verbally, not by text or email. Tell me about the fiance.
That's right. He was the last person to see her, and we know that he was not the person who contacted police. His lawyer, and he's been with her daughter. His lawyer has released a statement and says that he is now cooperating with police. He did give a DNA swab of his mouth. He did hand over his phone, but he did not attend a press conference earlier this week. Where her mother did attend and spoke and begged for her daughter's return. His lawyer claims that Patrick didn't know about the press conference until an hour before it began. Otherwise, he would have been there. And he hasn't said a word to the media. That's what the lawyer said.
Kelsey Barrett, 29, has not been spotted since she went grocery shopping with her baby, Woodland Park, Colorado. Fiance tells cops she dropped the baby off afterwards at his home, has not been seen since. Her phone pinged about 700 miles away from where she was last seen 3 days later. Now, does that make sense to you? Karen Smith, forensics expert, 700 miles in 3 days. Does that make sense? It can be done.
Well, sure, it can be done, but none of it makes sense to me, Nancy. First of all, if my fiance had gone missing, I would be freaking out after 3 hours. First of all, 10 days. She was reported missing 10 days later, and the cell phone ping 700 miles away. Are you kidding me? I would be all over the press. I would be in front of every camera that would put my face on television. I would be talking to everyone and anyone if I had nothing to do with this.
10 days is a long time to pass. Ashley Wilcott, I'm looking at the video right now. She comes in the front of the grocery store. She's carrying the baby in a car seat. Oh, it looks just like the ones I would carry the twins in, double-fisted. She puts the car seat in the front of a cart with the baby facing her, you know, that top area, and then she drives off. She's got on a coat. Her hair's back in a bun, and the baby's all bundled up. All right, so what do we know about him originally not giving DNA? Because at this juncture, Ashley Wilcott, he has done interviews. He has released his phone to be searched. He's given buccal swabs, which is, you know, a mouth swab, and photographs. On the other hand, Ashley, I guess his lawyer said, look, if you don't give it to them willingly, they can get a warrant from you and take it from you.
Right. That's what the lawyer's going to advise him. But let me ask you this. Why get a lawyer in the first place if you're not involved? And second, 10 days. I agree with your guest. 10 days. Who waits 10 days to figure out where somebody is, especially the mother of your one-year-old?
You know, he also, the lawyer says that, what does this mean to you, Dr. Daniel Bober? You're the forensic psychiatrist. The lawyer has added that the fiance for Z will not speak publicly because he does not want to, quote, impede the police investigation.
Yeah, I mean, Nancy, a lot of this stuff is not dispositive, but it's certainly very suspicious. I mean, he's sort of reluctantly cooperating and sort of has to be dragged to do it. So that's definitely concerning. And it seems like he definitely has something to hide, although, again, it's not dispositive.
Well, I agree with you because let me go to you, Ashley Wilcott. When the chief of police there at Woodland Park, Chief Miles DeYoung, was asked at the press conference about the fiance not being there, he simply said, you'd have to ask him. Okay, now see, I can read a lot into that response, Ashley.
Absolutely. He's not cooperating, and it sounds like law enforcement's frustrated because where most people who have a missing person in their life do anything and everything they can and give law enforcement every shred of everything they need, the boyfriend is not doing that. The fiance is not cooperating. So I think it does indicate something's amiss.
Now, the brother, Clint Barreth, said that he realized she was missing and he goes to her home. And what the brother, Clint Barreth, says is the only thing missing from the home was her pocketbook, her luggage, her makeup, all untouched, and her two vehicles are still at the home. Ellen Kaloran, you left that little detail out. Both her cars are at the house. Her luggage, her makeup, all that. The only thing missing is her pocketbook, which I'd like to point out she had with her when she was at the grocery store.
That's right. And not only was all of that stuff left behind, but there was also some cinnamon rolls that she had clearly just baked that day that by the time they got there, they were cold. But she was baking in her kitchen, and it looks like she just pulled out the rolls to cool and had every intention of coming back. There are absolutely no signs in the home that she was planning on going away for any amount of time.
Crime Stories with Nancy Grace. Kelsey Barreth's body has never been found. Her little girl, now raised without a mother or a father, thanks to her mom's fiancé, Patrick Frazee, and his mistress. Frazee appealed his conviction, and he targets a meeting with a Teller County Department of Human Services caseworker just days after his arrest. According to the Supreme Court opinion, the caseworker met with Frazee to discuss the future of his and Kelsey's baby. That caseworker then testified against Frazee. Frazee moved to suppress all those statements he made behind bars during that meeting, arguing it was a custodial interrogation, and he was questioned by the caseworker without Miranda rights. Okay, so the caseworker meets with Frazee about his baby girl that he orphaned, and now he's saying he should have been Mirandized before he spoke to the caseworker. Okay, that's unique. How did the baby end up being an orphan, Frazee? Remember this?
Frazee's former girlfriend and Twin Falls woman, Crystal Kenny, made a plea deal in exchange for the information outlined in that report.
An affidavit from the murder case of Kelsey Barrett revealing more graphic details about her death and the months leading up to her alleged murder. In court Tuesday, prosecutors revealed Barrett's fiancé, Patrick Frazee, blindfolded Barrett on Thanksgiving Day before hitting and killing her with a baseball bat. The information stemming from Frazee's former girlfriend and Idaho woman, Crystal Lee Kenny. Kenny agreed to testify against Frazee as part of a plea deal for tampering with evidence. On Wednesday, the affidavit revealed Kenny told investigators that she traveled to Colorado after Frazee said she needed to clean the murder scene in Barrett's home, removing any traces of blood left on the walls, couch, television, and even on the stuffed animals belonging to the couple's one-year-old daughter. Kenny also told investigators that Frazee was concerned that one of Barrett's teeth were left behind. Kenny says she later found it and got rid of it. The affidavit also shows Frazee wanted Kenny to bring Barrett's body to Idaho, but she says she refused and instead Frazee burned the body.
Our friends at Denver 7 reporting the very latest out of a Colorado courtroom. I'm Nancy Grace. This is Crime Stories. Thank you for being with us. This is what we are learning. We are learning that Patrick Frazee tricks his fiancée, the mother of his little girl, Kelly, into blindfolding her and asking her to smell different scented candles, then rearing back with a baseball bat and striking her in the head and face, that he hits her so hard. His big concern, he didn't find all of her teeth that he knocked out of her head. We go on in this affidavit, if you comb over it very, very carefully, we learn that his mistress, rodeo queen, finds the tooth with the root still attached and disposes of it. She is in the thick of this. On her hands and knees, after traveling 13 hours overnight, to come to Patrick Frazee at his beck and call. Nobody had a gun to her head. Driving through the night, leaving her two daughters she claims to be so worried about, so she could clean up. Frazee calls her and says, girl, you got a mess to clean up. And she comes running, complete with a hairnet, a surgeon smock, surgeon booties worn in ERs, surgical gloves, bleach, Windex, and she spends the next 4 to 6 hours on her hands and knees scrubbing. You know what? I'm not buying it. With me, an all-star panel, forensics expert, professor of forensics, Jacksonville State University, and author of Blood Beneath My Feet on Amazon, Joseph Scott Morgan. California prosecutor, Wendy Patrick. Renowned forensic psychiatrist, Dr. Daniel Bober. Judge, lawyer, anchor, Ashley Wilcott at ashleywilcott.com and crimeonline.com investigative reporter, Ellen Killoran. First to you, Ashley Wilcott. When she says she did all of this, cleaned Kelsey Barris' condo, scrubbing, there was blood on the bath mat. That had to be thrown away. Blood on the commode, blood on the ceiling, blood in the kitchen, blood on the oven mitts, blood on the baby's toys, who P.S. was in the next room in a playpen while Frazee murdered Kelsey Barrett, the baby's mother. Blood on toys, blood on stuffed animals, blood on the sofa, blood on pillows, blood on books, blood everywhere on the rock face of Kelsey's fireplace. Everything soaked in blood on oven mitts. On Kelsey Barris' purse, she cleaned it all up. And then while he, after killing Kelsey, goes and sits down to Thanksgiving dinner with his family, it certainly didn't hurt his appetite. Then after she cleans up, she goes with him and arm in arm, they watch the body burn on a bonfire. Help me out, Ashley.
Yeah, I didn't mean to interrupt you, but two things. The first is, let's talk about him and the fact that such a brutal, heinous murder. Of course, there's blood on every inch of everything in that home. Of course there is. He beat her with a baseball bat. Number two, she's complicit in this crime. You don't go clean it up. You don't have information that, oh, we've tried and talked about killing her in the past. These are crimes that you report to the police immediately. She's complicit in this murder.
Well, you know, Ashley, you really hit the nail on the head. Let me go to you, Wendy Patrick, California prosecutor. When you see an attack like this that is so bloody, it's just chaos. Many experts say, oh, that was a crime of passion. BS, yeah. Wendy. Yeah. That's a technical legal term because he had approached her, I believe, four times. Once that's to right. beat Kelsey with a baseball bat. Once he gave her a metal pipe, according to her. Once he wanted her to poison Kelsey's caramel macchiato with Ambien and Valium. And once he tried to get her to come do the deed, but she was in Reno and couldn't get a ticket. This is well planned. This is no spur of the moment murder.
That's right. And it's that chronology of sophisticated attempts, prior attempts, that really will just blow out of the water some kind of a defense based on passion. And I think we see that in cases like this frequently, where you have to look at the history of what's gone on between this couple, of how has it been pre-planned. But given that, one of the things that strikes me about this case, you know, it would have been much, much calmer, let's say, if it were a poisoning or something like this. The brutality of the way the murder was finally committed in this case is shocking. And it no doubt is going to be shocking to people that are now going to be deciding why it happened, how it happened, and who all is culpable for it.
So many horrific details revealed if you carefully comb through that arrest affidavit. Not only do I want to thank our guests, Joseph Scott Morgan, Wendy Patrick, Dr. Daniel Bober, Ashley Wolcott, and Ellen Kaloran, along with Jackie Howard and Alan Duke, I want to thank our partner making today's program possible. It's Blink. So when do you want to spot a burglar? When he's casing your home outside or when he's got his foot in your kitchen window? John's Blink camera alerted him of burglars trying to break in while he and his family are actually home. Or Shannon, her Blink camera caught a thief stealing packages. Both times, Blink video clips sent to police to get the bad guys. Blink, B-L-I-N-K, motion-activated indoor-outdoor cameras are wire-free. They set up in minutes, run on two AA batteries that last up to 2 years. If you're traveling, which I have to do a lot, Blink's live feed option lets you monitor your home, check out your children, your pets, your home from anywhere using Blink's smartphone app. I can do it from a plane. No contracts, no subscriptions, totally affordable, and Blink works with Alexa. Blink camera systems make great gifts, and they're an excellent way to monitor your home. Visit blinkprotect.com/Nancy, blinkprotect.com/Nancy, blinkprotect.com/Nancy. Blink's an Amazon company. Thank you, Blink, for being our partner.
Prosecutors have met the burden to show there is enough evidence to charge Patrick Frazee with murder.
He will stay in jail with no bond pending trial.
Central to the case for prosecutors is testimony from Crystal Lee, a woman we now know dated Patrick in college. The two also had an affair in 2016 and 2017. Prosecutors say Frazee asked her to kill Kelsey Barrett three different times.
She sat and said, I can't do this, and tells Patrick, I can't do this.
We also know from court documents, Lee says Frazee told her to lie to the FBI in addition to help make it look like Barrett was in Idaho and may have killed herself.
Crystal cleans up blood, but leaves behind some telltale evidence for our investigators to find.
Investigators spoke to three other people besides Lee about this case. Each had details revealing the plan prosecutors say Frazee had all along to kill Barrett. It's still unclear exactly why any of them did not come forward sooner and if they could have saved Barrett's life.
That was a question that was asked today. Did she call police? It's not one that was answered on the record. You know, we are constrained that we can only talk about what was put on the record on any particular day.
You are hearing CBS Denver's Sean Chitness talking the very latest after coming through an arrest affidavit that we got out of the courtroom. You know, now she's saying that she left blood behind. I'm talking about the girlfriend, Crystal Lee, left blood behind on the face of Kelsey's fireplace. The murder occurred in the living room for cops to find. You know, why not just call the cops when he first asked her to commit murder? Straight out to crimeonline.com, Ellen Kaloran. Ellen, I'm not really buying it that she intentionally left blood behind for inspectors or detectives to find.
Me neither, Nancy. That's one of my biggest problems with her testimony. I'm really, really struggling with her claims that she said after the fact that she did all of these things to help investigators, that she left the blood on the fireplace, but clean the rest of it up. If you really wanted to help investigators, maybe don't dispose of the tooth that was dislodged when Patrick Frazee allegedly beat Kelsey Barrett over the head. If you really wanted to help investigators, you would leave something more obvious. We're also learning some things in the arrest affidavit that was released yesterday that I'm not a lawyer, and I'm interested in what you all with legal experience believe, but I'm worried that the defense is going to go after a lot of things that we're learning, including the fact that she lied to police initially. They went to meet her out in Las Vegas where she was on a trip, and she said that she didn't have a relationship with Patrick Frazee. She said she'd never heard of Kelsey Barrett. And now the prosecution's case seems to be hinging so much on her testimony, and there's no body.
Well, I'll tell you, I think that the state is going to have to put her on the stand and hold their nose at the time. I mean, Joseph Scott Morgan, professor of forensics, Jacksonville State University. Joe Scott, what about forensics? Will they carry the day? Because here's where I'm coming from, Joe Scott. This is not what I believe happened, but Crystal Lee, the rodeo queen, his other lover, has really set herself up for a claim that she's the killer. She's there on the scene. She cleans up the blood. She gets rid of evidence. She knows where the body is. She knows what happened to it. And he can easily claim she did it. Will forensic evidence carry the day, Joe Scott? Let it go.
Yeah, hey, I got to tell you, Nancy, I think that the defense is really going to drill down on this, where they're going to try to pin it to her more than likely. And look, I would, if we could have it in a perfect world, I'd love to have this woman's body, because I think that you're going to find out a lot more information relative to these injuries she sustained and the power that was involved in bludgeoning her to death with this alleged baseball bat. And, you know, yeah, it's going to be very powerful at the scene relative to what kind of testing they did there. This blood that was allegedly cleaned up in an attempt to, you know, cover this whole thing up. Did they get this to luminesce with something like luminol out there?
Oh, keep, I know what they used. It's in the affidavit. They used the Blue Star Regent protocol.
Yeah. And what's really great about this, do you remember just a few moments ago you were talking about what was that amount of time that she drove to get there? You said something like 13 hours.
Yeah, overnight.
Yeah. Hey, get this. Did you know that the longer you allow these stains to set in place, it's just like anything else, Nancy, a piece of clothing, the harder it is to wipe away, even using bleach, any of trace elements of blood. So they waited a long time before they cleaned this mess up.
What does that say to you? Let's go to our forensic psychiatrist joining us today out of the Florida jurisdiction, Dr. Daniel Bober. Dr. Bober, it just is beyond me how he can beat her head in with a baseball bat while she's smelling a candle he gave her, with the baby in a playpen in the next room, have a horribly bloody crime scene, I mean soaked in blood, and just fold her body up and put it in a tote bag, put it in his pickup truck, drive to his family's house with the baby, I guess wash his hands of the blood like Pontius Pilate, and sit down to turkey and dressing and cranberry sauce like nothing's wrong, leaving the crime scene sitting there to decompose for two full days for his mistress to come clean it up. What is that, Dr. Bober?
True psychopathy, Nancy. Zero remorse, zero empathy, zero connection with other human beings. But Crystal Lee is very interesting because, you know, she's claiming to be this clueless, hapless victim that was unwittingly led down the path. And clearly she's complicit. Clearly she's involved. She lied. She tried to conceal evidence. She tampered with the scene. And I think she's, you know, truly responsible. I think she knew exactly what she was doing, and she was intimately involved.
Straight out to Ellen Kaloran, CrimeOnline.com, investigative reporter. At CrimeOnline.com, we have this and all other breaking news and crime and justice. To EK, let me ask you a question. Let's talk about Crystal having a gun in her car. I saw that in the affidavit, especially as it relates to her best friend, Megan Garrison.
That's right. There's a new item in the affidavit that shows not that Crystal did a lot to cover up what she was doing. She switched cars with her friend Megan, apparently because she didn't want her very recent ex-husband to know what was going on. So she switched cars with her friend, and the FBI interviewed the friend later in the investigation. And the friend said that she has a gun. We don't know what type of weapon, but she had a gun in her car. And the friend, Megan, told investigators that there was, it does not sound like it's a gun that she uses very often. She said that there was a bullet missing. Last night, I called Spencer Kirsten, a friend of Crime Online and Crime Stories, who's a security expert, and he explained to me that it's possible for a bullet to discharge from a gun without it being fired. But again, this is something that I worry that the defense is going to look at and say, wait a second, what happened with this gun? And is it too late to get any kind of ballistics from it?
To Wendy Patrick, California prosecutor. Wendy, where does this leave Crystal Lee, the rodeo queen, divorced mother of two, has been dating Patrick Frazee since college. They reignited their love, according to this affidavit, in around 2017 or 18. I think that's according to the ex-husband who's living with her under the same roof. Where does this leave her credibility? Because if you carefully read the affidavit, you see that she lied to her best friend, Megan Garrison. She told her best friend that she was going somewhere different. She set up a fake email message that she had to stay that night, and that would be the night she was cleaning up the murder scene, with Megan because she was, quote, too drunk to drive, something, some BS like that, in case her ex-husband read the emails. Okay, so she's setting up a fake email. She goes and gets a new phone to get rid of all the cell phone evidence. She cleans the crime scene. She's been solicited three or four times to commit murder and never calls police. She stands there arm in arm with Patrick Frazee while they watch the black tote bag with silver handles melt with a heap, as she describes it, inside. She won't say it to cops, but she knew that was Kelsey's body. And catch this. You got the mom, too, Frazee's mom, Sheila, who was home at the time of the bonfire. So what's her credibility? What is Crystal Lee's credibility?
Yeah, Nancy, it leaves her in a really bad spot when it comes to being a credible witness. And when we discuss the relationship she had with the defendant, in this case, the killer, I know that it sounds like, oh, it was an affair. They used to be sweethearts back in the day. It's a relationship of power and control to commit a murder and then insist she come over and clean up the mess. No doubt these are the kinds of cases where a woman that's involved often says, I was under the influence of the perpetrator and I feared what would happen if I didn't comply with his requests. If you were to look at it through that lens, she might have more credibility than not. But again, Nancy, like you just pointed out, this long list of inconsistencies and dishonest statements that are listed in the affidavit, that's got to amount to a huge blow to her credibility, notwithstanding the fact that she was involved in a very sick relationship.
Crystal tells us that on November 22nd, Thanksgiving, Patrick kills Kelsey in a horrific manner with a bat in the back of the head as Kelsey is sniffing candles with a blindfold over her eyes. Crystal tells us that Patrick then calls her after he has put Kelsey in a black plastic tote, calls Crystal to come out and help him clean up. She does not come out that day. She cannot come out that day, but she does come out on October 24th. And as Crystal describes, when she walks into Kelsey's condo, the scene is horrific. There's blood everywhere. There are bloody footprints everywhere.
Crime Stories with Nancy Grace. In the last days, the Colorado Supreme Court rules the caseworker was not acting as LE law enforcement when meeting with Frazee, and therefore, there was no reason to give Frazee his Miranda rights. The court went on to determine the DHS worker had an independent duty
to investigate the safety and protection of Barrett's baby. And it was not to further the investigation against Frazee by law enforcement. That's a whole other can of worms than when you're being interrogated by police. Patrick Frazee to remain behind bars, for now anyway. The Colorado Supreme Court upholds his murder conviction, probably because of the incendiary nature of the facts that came out at trial. Trust me, it ain't over yet. Frazee is going to appeal this all the way to the U.S. Supreme Court if he can. And we wait as justice unfolds. Nancy Grace, Crime Story, signing off. Goodbye.
This is an iHeart podcast. Guaranteed human.